Now, a leading model used by the White House to predict the number of COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. has been revised downward. The model from the University of Washington now projects about 60,000 deaths by early August. Last week, it was saying about 82,000. It also shows the U.S. peaking this past weekend. But some other models continue to suggest we've got a longer way to go. For example, a model in Washington, D.C. has the nation peaking at the end of June. Others show the U.S. should prepare for up to 200,000 deaths in the coming months. So why do these models vary so much, and what conclusions should we draw from them? Ali Mokhtad is director of Middle Eastern Initiatives and a professor of global health at the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington. He also works on the Institute's COVID-19 model. Ali, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Why did we see this significant revision downward over the last weekend?
So what we have seen right now, that previous experience in both Italy and Spain have showed that the virus is not peaking as much, and the reduction on it is coming faster. So it goes faster and comes down faster. And that ended up in revising our estimate. And right now we are about 70,000 deaths by August 4th.
Now let's talk about how predicting something like this, the course of a disease, differs from predicting something like, say, the weather. If it's going to rain tomorrow, it's going to rain no matter what I do. But with the spread of a disease, it seems like by taking public measures, our own individual behavior can actually change things and make us revise our models. How do you take account for, you know, policy changes in human behavior when you do these models?
That's a very good point, Rob. That's exactly what we did in our models. Other models have estimated that the virus will be spreading without countermeasures. In our models, we included variables for social distancing, such as staying at home, educational facility closing, and non-essential services closed. And we adjust our model on a daily basis. Now we're releasing them three times a week. So we are assuming that there is a virus spreading around in the community, but people and authorities are doing something to contain it. And that's why our numbers have been lower than other people.
Now, let's talk about the model for when this peaks. Last I saw, your model had the peak over the last weekend. What does that mean, first of all, when we say the virus is peaking at a particular time?
So the virus is peaking and the burden is peaking and peaked in our models April 10. And that's good news. It means that the worst is behind us. And from now on, the number of deaths will decrease on a daily basis. We'll have, as a country, more deaths, of course, and that's a big loss for a lot of people, loved ones and friends and family. But it means that the pandemic is being controlled and it's coming down, less demand on our health facilities. But Rob, there is two things here that we need to pay attention on. The first one is that peak is a national peak. But we are seeing right now that states who have implemented the social distancing measures early on have a peak much earlier, like my state peaked, Washington peaked on April 5, New York peaked on April 8, whereas states like Georgia, Florida, Connecticut, they will peak at the end of April or 1st of May. And now we have two kind of epidemic curves. One will go down to what we consider as normal sometimes in the first week of May, and one will go down, these late adopters of these policies, at the late on first week of June.
Can we say from what you're saying about the models, Ali, and how they correspond with safe at home measures or stay at home measures, whatever they're called in a particular state or country, that these things are working? They're actually bending the curve, flattening the curve the way we've hoped they would?
They are working. And actually, in our models, we assume that the state who haven't implemented them will do so in 1 week. And every time we release a new model, that's why you see an increase in the number of deaths right now, because some of these states have not adopted them. And mortality rate increases are much higher in them than in the states that have adopted them. So we have data right now from the United States showing they are working. And that's why you're seeing this divergence in the curve of the epidemic between these states right now.
We're talking to Ali Mokhtad from the University of Washington. He works, among other things, on the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation there, a very commonly cited model of the coronavirus progression used, among other things, by the White House to try to get a handle on how the disease is spreading and how efforts are working. Ali, is it possible that if we change our behavior again, say by going back to normal, you would have to revise your projections in the other direction, that we could, by our choices, make things worse potentially.
That's very true, unfortunately, because we're all susceptible for this virus and it's still circulating out there. We have to be very careful. Remember, all of us paid a heavy sacrifice in our economy and staying at home, and some of us paid even a higher price by losing their lives, so we cannot relax right now. But at the same time, Rob, we have to be realistic and we have to figure out ways to open up the society again and open up our businesses. But we have to do it in a waves and phased approach, make sure the people that we ask to go to work, we can test them before they go out and make sure we can monitor them as they are working and slowly go back to what we call normal. Our normal will be different than the usual normal you and I knew before COVID-19.
Now, Ali, you've got a lot of lay people, not experts, you know, people like me, all of a sudden really interested in your model, and we see your model and other models and different numbers coming out. What do you suggest for those of us without this specific expertise, when we see numbers cited in a newspaper report or whatever, how should we think of these models? What can we do with them?
That's a very good question, and I've been asked this a lot. Rob, you know, we are academic and we may have an agreement or disagreement about a model, how you should do it. But all these models right now are telling us exactly the same thing, that this is a deadly virus. It's circulating and all of us are susceptible. And all what we have right now, until we have a vaccine or a drug for it, social distancing is what we have as a way to reduce its burden. So I will tell people, irrespective of the number out there, and I'm one, you know, be honestly, I'll tell you my model is better than any other model, but that's not the issue here. The issue here is the message coming from these models. Please stay at home, reduce the burden on your medical system. Give us some time to have the tests that we need in order to reintroduce some of you to go to business and expand that while we can monitor the situation and make sure we don't have setbacks after all what we sacrificed.
Ali, comparing one disease to another, what has been unique about the coronavirus, the novel coronavirus that causes COVID-19 as compared to other diseases we've tried to model the progress of in the past?
This is a new virus, of course, so we haven't seen it. There is no article I could go to and figure out how it behaved before. So we're learning, unfortunately, as we go, and we're relying on experience coming from countries who faced this burden before us, China, Italy, Spain, and so on. This virus is similar to what we have seen in the Spanish flu. It was introduced and nobody knew about it, and it was the first time we faced it. So we have to be extra careful because we don't have a vaccine again and we don't have a drug. And we don't know right now, like we found out later, that people who are asymptomatic have the virus and can be contagious. We know that some people right now have minor symptoms in a flu season and in a season of allergy. Some people will not seek medical care right now, but they still have the virus. So we have to be extra cautious. We're learning as we go. We're taking a cautious approach to it, which is the sound approach. But at the same time, I want the listeners to know that we in the public health, we're concerned about the economy and we're putting blueprints ahead in order to open the business. But please, we're not ready yet. We will be ready soon. There is light at the end of the tunnel.
And before I let you go, Ali, this sounds like a really challenging job right now. You're constantly finding new information about this disease that for humans is what, 5 months old or so now. So you're constantly updating your model, I imagine, based on new data from the country and around the world.
Yes, we are. And at the Institute for Health Metric and Evaluation, we have a large network of collaborators, over 5,000 scientific collaborators out there. So we're getting a lot of data, and with more data, our model gets better. We wish we have more data, but we're working with what we have, and we're trying to produce the best estimates so we can make decisions and policy based on the best data we have. And that's why we're updating these models on a regular basis, giving the new data coming to us.
Ali, thanks a lot for joining us today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care. Bye-bye.
Ali Mokhtad is a professor at the University of Washington who's been working on the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation's COVID-19 model. We talked to him about how infectious disease modeling works and why the model he works on recently lowered its COVID-19 death projections.